Baruch Hashem, with impeccable timing, my daughter gave birth yesterday, so I can come to the Shia tonight instead of being in North Shore visiting her. Baruch Hashem. A girl. Baruch Hashem. I have to tell you that this topic of eggs is a very, very complex topic. All the halachic aspects of kashrus, and I'm going to try to touch upon some of the minhagim that have resulted from some of these considerations, where eggs, as we know, were handled, we'll come back to in very special ways. Their own status, almost, the world of, unto themselves in kashrus. And perhaps the reasons that in the contemporary time we are not so meticulous as our forebears were. There's definitely been a sea change between what was and what is. And we'll try to establish why that is. And the subject is a very, very complex subject. It's complex. There are many different views in the halacha. And different types of circumstances. Well, let's start from the beginning. And the first thing we have to consider when we talk about eggs, we'll come back to varied contemporary considerations at the end of the share. But the first thing that has to be considered, if I crack open an egg and I find blood inside, so that's where the difficulties begin. Now, it's not the only difficulty, but let's start with that. Now, what is the status of that blood? Now, it's rather amazing that we do not have a clear-cut answer to this question. Why is that? Typically, the Isur of Dam is an Isur in the Torah, and it's a very grave Isur in the Torah. One that eats blood violates an Isur Koreh, so it's a pretty severe prohibition, akin to eating Chametz on Pesach. But that dam is dam which is associated with flesh. That's dam. The dam that we find inside an egg didn't yet reach the point that there's any flesh there. So the question is, what do we make of this dam? Now this dam, right now we're going to talk about in the first part of the shiur with fertilized eggs, which is really not the major situation that we confront. Because the typical chicken farm today has totally non-fertilized eggs. They don't want to know from the rooster because they're not interested in hatching chickens. They're interested in selling eggs. Now, if I found even in fertilized eggs, blood inside the egg. So there are varied views. The view of the Balei HaTosfos that the blood inside an egg would not be osur min haTorah under any circumstances. And whether the Gemara talks about the fact where the blood was found on the egg, and according to one interpretation, the classical interpretation, but again not the only interpretation of the Gemara, the blood which we find in association with in the egg whites, in certain parts in the egg whites, which would be indicative perhaps that the egg had been fertilized. So since that's where the new life is beginning from, that itself is considered also that blood. Now, this blood, though, according to the Balei HaTosfos, since it's not actually dam, is only also the Rabbanon. And the Rabbanon, when they made the Isur, because it is akin to the blood which is associated with flesh, because this is involved in actually forming the embryo. So therefore it's akin to typical blood, even though it's not actually typical blood. So when they made it osur, even if the blood, there's other blood in the egg, which is not associated with the life beginning process. And even if the eggs are non-fertilized eggs, they also made the blood that's found inside osur. But all of this dam is only osur midrabbanan according to the Tosfos. And there's a second view that says that this dam, which is involved with the creation of the new embryo, that dam is also midiraisa. So here we have a major divide, that we're dealing with an isa derabanan or an isa deraisa. Now principally, the halacha stated that the dam that we're concerned with is dam that's associated with certain parts of the egg whites. Now according which blood do we ask him? So principally the Ramah says if it was found on any place on the egg yolk, it was considered asr. We'll see in common practice what we did. And if it was found in the egg white, on what's called Mokom Akesha, at one point somehow, which was viewed as the starting point of life, with some debates, which end of the egg that actually is, and it's begun to spread, meaning that we can see in fact that the cells have begun to subdivide and form a life. So then the egg is asr. Now, according to this view, it comes out is that blood, which is associated with the egg yolk, is more stringent than blood that's associated with the egg white. Because once the blood reached, their view is that the life beginning process starts in the egg white. And then as it advances, it spreads to the egg yolk too. Consequently, any place on the egg yolk that you find that it's asr. Now, from this particular viewpoint, if I found blood in the egg whites, but not at the point that would be considered the starting point of a new embryo, it would be mutter, according to this view. Now, so that should have, those eggs should have been mutter. But the Ramah brings, the Ramah has an exactly opposite interpretation of the Gemara. And his interpretation of the Gemara is that wherever it's found in the egg white, it's always asr. And if it's found, like at one of the ends of the egg, on the egg yolk, then the yolk is asr. If it's found any place else on the yolk, then it's because that point is sort of the point of connection between the egg white and the egg yolk. And therefore, if it's found in that point, so he views it, that means that's moving from the egg white to the egg yolk, and that's the continuation of the life process. But any other blood in the egg yolk has nothing to do with it. Now, there is a reason that chickens have eggs, have blood in the eggs, which has nothing to do with the process of fertilization. And that stems from the fact that, we say that someone that's as scared as a hen. Scared, it's a chicken. Chickens are very anxious, irritable creatures. And if there are loud noises, they get very agitated. And if they get agitated as they're producing the eggs, so from the organs that are involved in that process, they throw off a little bit of blood. And that blood you can find inside the egg. And that's why principally nowadays, if we ever find a blood spot, it means the chicken got agitated at the time that the egg was being formed, before the shell was made. And therefore it threw off a little bit of blood. And that blood wound up inside the shell as the shell closed. So there are other reasons that we could have blood inside the egg. So the Ramah says, on the egg yolk, you have to see if it's connected to the part that's hooked up with the egg white. But anywhere in the white, that's where the life begins. So everyone agrees, apparently, it starts from the egg white and starts spreading into the egg yolk. But exactly which point in the white is the critical point, whether the whole white or only a specific part, that's been a debate. But the result of this, what comes out is the following. According to the first view, any place that we found it on the egg yolk, the egg is asr. But in the egg white, it depends. According to the second view, it's exactly in reverse. We have to find it on a specific spot in the egg yolk to be asr, but any place that we find it on the egg white, it's asr. Now, if we combine both of those views, then we come out with the fact that any place on the egg white that we found it, and any place in the egg yolk that we found it, would be asr. And the Ramah records the fact that the minhag emerged to be machmer according to both views, because both views had significant adherence among the Rishonim. So therefore, the minhag that emerged over the generations is that wherever a blood spot was found, wherever it was found inside the egg, we asked it. We said the egg is prohibited. But again, when was it actually prohibited? That was highly debatable under what circumstances. It could not be asr in all of those cases. But we took really the chumrah of every single view, and we combined all of the chumras, and we said any egg with it, any type of blood drop, we're not going to use. Now, the process really has two steps to it, and this is very important to understand. There's the issue of the blood itself, that the blood is also, and the simplest pshat is that no matter what the status of the egg is, the blood is always going to be also. If it's an egg which has a blood spot, and one, it's both a fertilized egg, and the blood is in one of the defined places in the egg, where it's usur, so then we say that shodi tichla bakula, that we're concerned that the blood spread its effect to the entire egg. It didn't just stay in one particular place, but spread throughout the egg to some measure. So when we're dealing with fertilized eggs, and we're found in the places that the halacha was concerned with, so we view the entire egg as being something that's usur. Now, we could ask ourselves the front now, typically, we would imagine that in European society, where our forebears lived, in the rural parts certainly of European society, that these were the typical eggs, the same way these were the typical eggs in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, these were the typical eggs in the time of our forebears, that the eggs were fertilized eggs. So now we have to ask ourselves, they had a number of very interesting practices and how to handle the eggs. That those that grew up, if you had either European parents or grandparents that you remember, so you know that an egg pot, usually they used a separate pot for eggs, and oftentimes they'd even take a tin can. I still remember in our home we had a big juice can, a 46-ounce juice can with the top cut off, and that was kept forever under the sink with the pots, and that's where you cooked eggs. They didn't cook eggs in anything else. And so the question is, first of all, why they had this separate pot. And secondly, as is well known, that the minhag of our forebears was always to cook three eggs together. They never cooked one or two eggs. And as I say, in both of those things, we have come to be more medical today. The contemporary practice in most places, I don't know what the Hasidim are doing today, I don't really know. But the contemporary practice does not place this emphasis on these two points anymore. Whereas, as a child, I can undoubtedly tell you that a generation back and the generations before that, this was universal practice. This is part and parcel of keeping kosher. Now we can ask ourselves a very simple question. Why is it, normally we know that bittul is b'shishim. Now if we're dealing that we just took an egg, the three eggs mixed together, one of them is treif and two are kosher, so I know why I need three eggs. I take one of those eggs out, and that's a kosher egg, and fine. But we saw on the Siman Kuf tests earlier this winter, what happens if I cook all of them together? And then I don't have chad b'treif bottle anymore, right? I had my case that I had my two kosher hamburgers and my one treif, and as long as I don't cook all of them together in one pot, so I can at least eat two of them. I can eat three or not, that's a machlokes in the Rishonim, but two I certainly can eat. But once I take, if I take all three of these and warm them together, then I'm sunk. Then I need shishim, according to the way we pask. So I need shishim. So what's it going to help if I had three eggs together and I cooked them? If I was merely just taking one out of three, one was treif and two were kosher, and I was taking one, I was taking two, fine. But we went, I put three in a pot, and I cooked all of them together. So what's it going to help me? That I had three eggs. This was a puzzling question. I decided I wanted to figure out the answer to this enigma. So I discovered in Siman Samach Vav in Yerodei, Sufkot and Dalet in the Ramah, the following. That the halacha that you need shishim would apply if I knew with certainty that the egg that I took was an egg that's osur. In other words, it had the dam in a specific place which would make the egg osur. Then the halacha would be that I would need shishim to be mevatel the egg. So if I took one such egg, and I knew, let's say I candled the egg, and I was able to do it with such accuracy that I knew exactly where the blood spot was, and I knew that it's osur. Let's say, according to the first shita, that any place in the egg yolk, it's osur. I candle the egg, and I candle the egg, and I see that on the yolk there is a blood spot. It's a rather amazing thing that by shining a light into an egg, you're able, actually, the egg appears to be translucent. And they're able to see exactly spots on it. Now, apparently, they even have digital means that they've devised. We even need less people involved to actually candle eggs. They can do it digitally now, with some type of sensors that could figure out what's going on inside the egg. But you can actually put it in a light and shine a light through it, and you can see the egg yolk and see if there's a spot on the egg yolk, if it has a blood spot or not. And nowadays it's typically done before the eggs come to us. But I guess in my childhood, I presume it wasn't. Or maybe where the eggs were coming from, it wasn't. I don't know why. But I yet remember when I was a child and we used to go to the grocery store on Lake Avenue in East New York. So they had a little room in the back with a curtain and there was a lamp there. I just recently asked someone exactly how it worked. But I remember there was a lamp and they used to go and they used to look at the eggs there and they used to candle them in the back of the store. So I presume that they arrived, wherever the source was, they weren't candled before they arrived at the store. So the store had to candle them before they actually...
They weren't in a dozen boxes either. They came in bulk cards.
I guess that they probably...
So you had white egg boxes put together, doesn't it?
I guess, I was too young exactly to remember the whole process, but I still remember that was fascinating enough to see. I could still see it now in my mind's eye in the back of the store, a little curtain spot in the lamp. That's what I remember of it, that I knew there were candling eggs there. So the question is, if I know that the egg spot is in a place that made it also, let's say according to the first view, it's on the yolk, so it's definitely also, and I cooked that egg with other eggs, so the halacha is that I certainly would need shishim. And that's even if the egg had its shell on, the egg that I was cooking and all the other ones, it would not make any difference. I would still need shishim. But the Shulchan Aruch says, suppose though that in our eggs, we're machmer and all the sfeikas. So we don't always usually know exactly, and especially if I'm cooking an egg, do I know if the egg is really osur or not? Usually, if I would know it's osur, I wouldn't be cooking it anyhow. So why did I take the, and even afterwards, it's going to be hard to determine. In a cooked egg, we say, we really don't have the bikiyas to know clearly what's osur and what's not. The halacha is really, even mitzad the minute, there was no achrayas, there was no responsibility to check cooked eggs. So the question is, so the Ramah says, if I don't know, it's just a stam egg, and we'll machmer all types of chumras. See, the halacha is, though, that it's bottle, but it's bottle beroiv, chad v'tray. So that was apparently the reason that they cooked all three of the eggs, three eggs together, assuming that, listen, in the normal situation, the worst that they would be afraid of, it's only a small myriad of the eggs had blood spots. So therefore, one out of three, there was certainly a lot more than two out of three eggs didn't have blood spots. So consequently, to put three eggs together, I could presume that even if there was something which would cook and make something else osur, but it would not have the ability, it would be bottle bereif. So mamela, whatever else might have happened here, but it didn't osur the other eggs. So that's apparently was their cheshbon for what they did. The Shach, interestingly, even goes so far as to write that let's say you only had two eggs. And you found one of them to be osur. But again, in a situation which is unclear, which are most of our situations, because there are many, many machlokas, and exactly, is it the egg white, or the egg yolk, and exactly which spot on the eggs are the critical spots. So most of the time that we osur, we prohibit an egg, it's only misofik, out of doubt. So the Rushach says, even if it was one to one, we would be matur with also. Because it's only dealing with an Issa Darabonah, and it could be that the one-to-one, the other egg was larger than this egg. So who says this egg was larger than the other one? So that's enough of a suffix, the Shach says, in Samach Vav Sifkot and Hedek, we would be matter even one-to-one. But apparently our forebears established a practice in the Chachila of not taking that chance. They cooked Afka three together to be absolutely certain that if one of those three would be Osir, then it would still be bottled. That's number one. Now, I think that they had a second kavanah. The reason that they wanted to take a separate pot for eggs, totally separate, that they didn't use for anything else. So I believe the reason for that is the following. I believe they were concerned what would actually happen if two of the eggs were osur. It could happen sometimes. So if two of the eggs would be osur, you'd have rov isur. So then not only would it osur the other egg, but it would osur the pot too. But so misafik, I don't know. So I wasn't machmar, and I went boss a robe that most eggs didn't have a blood spot, etc. But maybe, in fact, the pot did become osur. So lechatchila, their eitzah was that they cooked eggs in a separate pot. So in other words, bottle, you know, most of them, they'll go boss a robe. So in terms of kashering it, misafik, they were makel. But they didn't want the possibility that another pot of nas could become treif. And if I actually wound up with two treif eggs, because two of them had blood in it, then the pot would become treif. In other words, we don't normally take things into our house and cook them and play Russian roulette. You know, we don't roll the dice. Well, okay, how are we going to come out? You know, are we kosher or treif today? If we have any doubt if something's kosher or treif, then we don't use it in the first place. But what happens if you cook an egg with the shell on? So then we don't know what's going on inside. So Mamela, for that reason, they were knowing that they kept a separate egg. But that's my assumption of why both of these practices emerged. Now this was all assuming that
the pack, if you found two
or
three.
Maybe if they found, but the cooked eggs were really said were not bekiyim to find, so you can't really know. In other words, if you open them, I guess, partially cooked, like poached or whatever, you open them and you found two of them treif, I guess maybe they would have kashered it. If you found, in other words, opened it in a very soft state, so that you could actually see it, and you found out, you happened to find out two were treif, they probably would have kashered this pot. So to make sure they did not have problems, they used a separate egg pot.
Why is it when you cook the eggs fully, you don't see the spots? Because I've seen it like in the brown eggs, when you open up another brown eggs, they have spots.
Yeah, but we don't know what those spots are anymore.
We
don't know what they are. We may presume, but that's an assumption. There are many other things in eggs.
When you cook those, there's no spots on them. So it just blows them off.
That's why the Shulchan Aruch says that there's no chiyuv to check eggs that you're going to cook, because most eggs don't have a problem. And you can't check them afterwards, because a lot of it, I presume the reason is that the eggs are somewhat porous. And I presume that the water has some effect that goes inside, and also the cooking, the turbulence of the liquid inside when it's being cooked. And therefore it diffuses, it probably dissolves. So we don't really know about exactly what was there before it. Now this is all in the situation when we're dealing that there were fertilized eggs. Today, on a egg farm, even when they hatch eggs, they take the females, the hens, and the roosters, they kill immediately. As soon as they're born, they kill them. They have no use for them. Because roosters are not going to lay eggs. Roosters can only make trouble for them. So they kill the roosters on the spot as soon as they're born. And they raise the hens. So you can have a million chickens today without one rooster in sight. Now this significantly changes the halacha. Now the dam still remains also, just as the As said, at least midrabanan, every other type of dam in the, at least midrabanan, every other type of dam that's in the egg is also, even if it's not involved with the fertilization process itself, but the rabanan banned all of it. So the blood that's found in a non-fertilized egg is also also. But here's where the difference. I told you before, as halach of shali tichla bekula, that the dam is considered as having affected the entire egg, that's only in a fertilized egg. In a non-fertilized egg, the rest of the egg is kosher, only the blood is awesome. So now, the question becomes a different question. That's the reason I believe that we're not so concerned to cook the three eggs together and to have a separate egg pot, because how much blood is there altogether? Our blood is a mashu. That mashu is certainly going to become bottled. But where is it not going to be bottled? It's bottled in the egg itself. It's not even 1/60th of the egg yolk that it's associated with. So what's the point that I have to, I don't need anything else. And nothing can ever become treif. So the shayla though, that we have is a different shayla, which comes from a different angle. And that is, why do we have to check the eggs altogether? For what reason do we have to check them? What's the reason for it? Do we really have to be so concerned if we're going to find good? The dam is certainly, I don't intend, the halacha is ein mevatlin isur l'chatchila, meaning if I have something which I know is osur, I'm not allowed to mix it together with shishim to get rid of it. That I'm not allowed to do. And the halacha is that if whether it's an isa deraisa or isa derabbanan, but in either case, if I would willfully do so, so the rabbanan did a job on me, and they said that it remains osa. It's not even though it's shishim, but since I try to skirt the halacha, so that's it. So they knocked me over the head, and they said it remains osa. But that's only assuming that my intention was to be mevatlet, to mix all of these things together. But if I had no intention of doing it, it just incidentally happened, and then the rule of ein mevatlet isa lechatchila, that I'm not allowed to nullify isa in the first place, doesn't apply. Now the classic case of this is very interesting. When the processing of honey, so honey from the beehive, almost when it's extracted from the beehive, always has little pieces of bees in it. The bees that are not so successful and surviving. So there are always little bees pieces in the honey. So how do they get rid of it? So long ago in history, they discovered that the way to get rid of this is by boiling the honey, pasteurizing it. And by boiling it, it purges, it drives them out. It causes the honey and these bees pieces to separate, and that's how they're able to get rid of them. This is the process which has been used over the centuries. So now a question arises, there's a special chiddush in the halacha that why the honey is considered mutter. It's sort of considered something which did not really go fully through the regular digestive system of the animal. It's some type of secretion. Well, it's a chiddush in the halacha that honey is mutter. Normally the halacha states that anything which comes forth from a creature which is non-kosher remains non-kosher. If you take pig's milk, so the milk is also treif. So there's a special chiddush, a special din, that honey is mutter. So now I took honey which is mutter and I cooked it with bees legs which are osur, and it became bottle. Some tam comes out, it's a liquid. So some of the tam of the bees legs goes into the honey before I purge the pieces. So why is it mutter? Why is it not mevatel isa lechatchila? So all the achronim, the shach and the taz, everybody in Yeruday writes the same story. That why did I cook this? That I cooked this because I wanted to dissolve the bees' legs, cause the flavor of the bees' legs to affect the honey. Believe me, I think all of us sitting here would be happier if we could get the honey without being bothered with the bees' legs in the first place. So why do we cook it? It merely is a means of purging the honey from the pieces of bee, of the bees. So therefore, since my intention is not to be mevatelet, so there's no problem of mevatelet isa lechatchila. So here, if I take an egg, and I don't know if there's anything mutter or osur in it, and I'm going to cook it. So what's the worst? There was one tiny speck of blood. I can't have a whole egg which is osur anymore. So when I get done cooking it, the blood is going to be bottled. So why do I have to check it? For what reason? What obligates me to check it? If the whole egg would be osur, so at the end I'm going to wind up with an egg that's osur. If I don't check it, that's why I have to check it. But here, no matter what's going to happen, the egg is going to be mutter. Midrash is going to be mutter, midrabbanan is going to be mutter. The worst case scenario, it's still going to be mutter. So what do I have to check the egg for altogether? Now this is rather interesting. Rav Moshe says it's only a chumrah. It is no longer, it's not obligatory in our society to check the eggs. It says it's a minhag. A minhag is normal. It means a normal balabusta is supposed to do such a thing. But it also means if somebody doesn't do it, the world doesn't end. You know, they're not running a trade for establishment. He says, what's the minhag based on? The minhag is based on the fact that there may always in any society be a very small percentage of eggs that are fertilized eggs. We cannot guarantee that every single egg that we have is non-fertilized. There are no fertilized eggs in the market. So he says, even in European society, where an egg was much more valuable in terms of a person's total economics than it is in our country, where there were no many chumras with eggs. And he says, consequently, he says, in our society, certainly the minhag remains, you know, that we check the eggs in the first place. But again, no longer, it's not a hard and fast din anymore. Now it's a question of minhag. The minhag is that we'd like to be very stringent in this halach of kashas. And therefore we check them, not because the halach necessarily obligates us to do so. Now I wanted to touch just on a number of other issues which have to do with eggs, besides the blood. And the first question I wanted to know is always the question that comes up every year. And in my research preparing the share, I was able to figure out enough about how the egg industry works to understand some things. First, is there really a problem with eggs for Pesach? Well, always the whole question, eggs for Pesach, and the eggs were washed, you know, in our youth. Again, they were very, very machmer. The other Eretz Yisrael, they want nishkevashana eggs which were not washed. Now, what's that all about? Now, chickens are not the most sanitary creatures in the world. That's an understatement. And consequently, when the eggs are hatched, they're laid, I should say, they're very dirty on the outside. Now, it would not be the wisest thing in the world to sell them, and that I don't think aesthetically, nor health-wise would it be the wisest thing for them to sell an egg. When they sell an egg on the market, they want it to look pristine. You open up a box of eggs, and you think this thing was made in a plastics factory, not, you know, it didn't come from a hen house. Now, part of what's on an egg on the outside, what are the egg on one scenario, it's not the only scenario, but one scenario is that chickens eat grain. They eat other things too. Some eat diets which solely are of meat. They don't eat grain necessarily, but there are those that eat grain. So do we have to be concerned that there's grain on the outside of the egg? And we said an egg can become osur if you cook it. So in the washing process, does this present the problem for Pesach or not? Now the way it's done nowadays in the commercial egg business, we can't know. If you go to some little farmer down the block from you, we can't talk about how Farmer Joe runs the farm. But if you're talking a commercial egg business in this country, a commercial egg business washes the eggs three times. Two times in chemical washes, and the third time they put it into water, which is at 120 degrees. Now you have to be careful. You remember with an egg, if you make the water too hot, it's going to cause the egg to curdle inside. So obviously they don't leave it in there too long. But there's a carefully defined temperature to cleanse, I guess, and sanitize the egg. And then you run it at 120 degrees. Now 120 degrees may be yad soled. This means enough temperature that al pi din it's considered cooking. So do we have a problem here or not? So the conclusion is that there isn't a problem. Because number one, after the first two chemical washes, basically everything is removed. Maybe some bacteria are not removed, but everything else is removed. And if it wouldn't be removed, it would have been so degraded that it would no longer be fit for eating because it was bathed in chemicals and two chemical washes beforehand. So by the time the hot water comes in contact with it, it could not make it osur. It would not make it osur. Now, so this apparently, this is one of my assumption is the reason that they initially did not want to use eggs which were washed off, because they were afraid if they were washed, that maybe they were washed in a way which would cause the egg to absorb some of the grain which was typically found on the outside. So they rather that the egg came not washed, so that the frum balabasta would wash it off with cold water before she used it. She would have controlled the process. There was no chance that they dumped hot water on the outside of this egg to clean it off. And it may have absorbed a certain amount of chametz. But in our particular, as I say, as commercial eggs are handled nowadays, at least in this country, does not seem to be an issue. There is another issue, and that is, suppose they ate feed, which was chametz stick, before yontif. So, and it's not the only thing. They drink water, they do other things. It's not the only thing that they have. It's not the only food that they have. They're going to have other things besides chametz stick and grain. So is this a problem or not? Now, the halacha, this is what the halacha calls in a very complex sugya that we did in Kol Shom Sochem of Zeb Zagur. It's something that is brought about as the end product of two different types of processes, two different types of input. One input which was mutter, and one input which is osur. And at the end they have this object. Milk, anything that comes forth from a living creature, milk, eggs, etc. If the animal eats chametz, non-chametz, so it is a byproduct of input of chametz and of non-chametz. So is this osur or not? So the way we paskin lahalocha is that before Pesach, zev zagarim, if it takes place before Pesach, is not a problem. On Pesach itself, it is a problem. We're more machmer. So consequently, this has given rise that we try to buy eggs which we know clearly were laid before Pesach for this reason. Because once they were laid before Pesach, so we know that Zeb Zagurim, nothing took place, and there was no chametz used on Pesach in association with these eggs. So that's the reason that we try to dafka to buy eggs which were laid before Pesach because of this. Now, a very interesting question: do eggs need hashgacha? Only bought.
And a kosher butcher.
So until I was grown,
I always bought eggs.
Well, the question is, do eggs need hashgacha? Now, that comes from a number of different standpoints. First of all, an egg of a non-kosher bird is also. Now, that non-kosher has two types of meanings. Whether the species itself is non-kosher, or whether the species is kosher, but the chicken is it's an avela, it died. And let's say they laid an egg in its death throes, and we found an egg complete with its shell inside. Or a treifa, an animal laid an egg, and right after that killed over and died. It was never geschachted. So those cases, the egg is also osa. So even though the min, it's a hen, but since the animal died, an untimely death, not through shechita, so the eggs associated with that would be osa. So the halacha stated, the Shulchan Aruch long ago passed, that we're not concerned for any of these things. Why? Since in our society, we typically only find eggs of hens. Those are the only eggs which are typically sold. And there's certainly nothing else being sold in our society which someone else can substitute for it and get away with it and deceive the balabusta. That's certainly not going to happen. So the largest majority, the super majority of eggs are kosher eggs. And they're not from the Veilun, they're not from Trefa, they're not from non-kosher species. So the Shulchan Aruch says we can buy eggs. Eggs do not need Ashgacha. We don't have to know their provenance to buy eggs. That's number one. A second issue with eggs, and this is interesting, this I don't think has so much to do with eggs that we use in the house. I don't think so. Although I don't know historically. But it's certainly an industrial egg. This was certainly an issue. When chickens are slaughtered, you can find eggs inside chickens. I remember yet as a child. I remember once. Yeah.
Just the egg yolks.
I still remember.
They came in different sizes.
Yeah, I remember as a child. I was thinking back that you opened up the chicken and there were eggs inside and we ate them. I still remember it. You're reminding me of a long, long time ago. Yeah. So I must have been, I couldn't have been, I was probably less than 10 years old when I'm thinking back about it. I remember my mother, Allah Shalom, giving me eggs, you know, from inside the chicken, which were found inside it now. Eggs that are found inside the chicken could be in different ways. If it has a shell on it, then it's certainly that egg could be parv. If it's without a shell, there's some question at what point it's still considered fleshig or not. If it's still attached, in other words, the blood vessels nourishing it are still attached and not severed from them, that egg is certainly fleshig. So you can have a fleshig egg. Now you can also have an egg which comes from the Velus and Trefus, but you can have fleshig eggs too. So this was once viewed as a reason that perhaps you needed hashgacha on eggs, on commercial eggs particularly. There were companies, in fact, who made a huge business out of collecting these eggs from slaughtered chickens. But this business, for whatever the reasons, this business has petered out in the United States. Egg ova.
I guess, Mr. Brock, how come they aren't anymore? She said, the chickens don't get old enough. She said, they shechlins so quickly. They process them quickly. They get them long enough to grow up or anything.
Yeah, and also, I think also they clean the kishkes out more. That's what I presume. You don't get any, the chickens hollow inside when you get it.
They just don't exist anymore.
Oh, they don't. You know, I remember, you don't see such a thing anymore. I mean, I haven't in all the years that I'm answering Shilas, no one ever came to me and said, Rabbi, I found this thing inside, what is it? You know, I've had other things that they found inside, but not eggs. So this seems to be, at least, there's not a real chash. The minig has emerged that on liquid eggs, which are used in processing commercially, we have extensive hashgacha today. Although many Paiskim wrote that they felt under the circumstances in the countries, in the developed countries of the world, that the liquid eggs would be acceptable without hashgacha. I mean, that there was nothing in the process. Again, that's always subject to change according to how the processing develops. But typically in today's world, there is hashgacha on liquid eggs. I mean, most commercial establishments today don't buy eggs. You don't find eggs in a commercial establishment, or a very minimal amount of them that they may need for something. But the overwhelming amount of eggs come in containers, the old style, like juice containers. That's where they come, and they come frozen, you defrost them, and that's it. And you pour eggs, you have liquid eggs ready to go. You don't pour them, you don't check them, nothing. You just get going. Now, another question, the eggs, all the eggs today, and this is by the law of the U.S., of the United States Department of Agriculture, they're all handled commercially. So does there still remain an obligation, or at least a basis for the minute, to check eggs in our own home? And the truth of the matter is, this is also mitigating against the issue, because the eggs are very well handled. But nevertheless, as we also know, the process is not 100% thorough. Now, it could be as it enters, they figured out the digital way to do it. Maybe, in fact, it will become a more perfect check than it is until now. Now, there's one final issue about eggs. It's a very practical issue. The Gemara neither says that there's three things that you're not supposed to peel and leave overnight. Again, if you grew up in a household where you had European parents or European grandparents, then you're probably familiar with this. If you're not, it's most likely that you're not at all familiar with this. The Gemara says the three things you're not supposed to peel and leave overnight. And those are garlic cloves, onions, and eggs. Now, all commercial eggs are left overnight. That's the way it is. So the question is this one afoul of this Gemara or not? And in my own house, if I want to make eggs for tomorrow and I peel them, let's say make hard-boiled eggs and peel them, so tomorrow I won't have to bother. I mean, tonight I have time to peel them. I don't have time to peel them tomorrow. So I'll peel them tonight and put them in the fridge, and tomorrow I'll make them into something. What's the halacha? So there's a lengthy, lengthy discussion in contemporary poskim about this. There are some shittas that want to say that we don't have to be concerned with this issue. The Gemara said it's some type of health issue, that it had some negative impact upon us, and they say we don't see any negative impact from it, and there are those in the Rishonim that already suggested it doesn't apply, and Mamela, we don't have to worry about it. So consequently, Rav Minyan of Minyan of Achenu B'nai Yisrael that do not observe this, have a basis as well for what they do. But the overwhelming percentage of the poskim hold that even Bizman HaZeh in contemporary times this applies. So basically, in an onion, you're not supposed to cut off the hairy part. If you leave the hairy part, you're all right, and you're not supposed to fully peel it and remove the hairy part, or peel a clove, or open eggs. Now, does this apply only to cooked eggs, or does it apply to raw eggs as well? There are some that say, just interestingly, in the Loshon of the Gemara, the text of the Gemara talks about Bayim Klufos, eggs that have been peeled, which would not seem to be a way to describe processing raw eggs. You don't peel raw eggs. You could say Bayim that you shuros, etc. You broke them open, but you would not describe it as peeling. Peeling is something the way you would describe opening a cooked egg. So they say the Gemara is undoubtedly talking certainly with cooked eggs. Ramesh Zatzal had a very interesting approach to this matter. Now, in all types of things that the Gemara says, which have a mystical basis to them, in other words, we don't see in the physical world around us their impact. So we view them as stemming from some type of mystical impact that it has, in some way that we don't comprehend. So the halacha, the rule, the Ramesh articulates, this is not the only one, other poskim as well, the rule in Shas is that these things are only to be applied in the fashion, the exact fashion that we found them in Shas. If the circumstances, the situation changes in the least way, then the limitations no longer apply. So Ramesh said, now first of all, what everyone agrees to is the following. If you add a significant ingredient that has, some say it doesn't have to have any effect, any ingredient. Some say it has to have some significance in the taste or in the processing of it, and yet an ingredient. Now, the liquid eggs usually come with citric acid in them, mixed together with them. Or you throw a little bit of salt inside, a little bit of oil inside. Enough that it has some effect on the whole thing. So that's undoubtedly that it's mutter in those cases. Rav Moshe said there's another heter for the commercial processes. He said the Gemara simply would be talking in a case where a person would peel it tonight and either willfully leave it tomorrow or to forget it and leave it until tomorrow. So that's the case that the Gemara was saying is also. Let's say it's in a commercial setting where it's typically done for, I peel the eggs now and they use months from now. He says the Gemara is not talking about such a case altogether. So that's enough reason, Rav Moshe says, that it does not necessarily apply. So I think, though, in the canned eggs usually, or today the container eggs, they're not only eggs. Citric acid they certainly have in them, because I've examined them in terms of many of them, they have, if there are other ingredients for Pesach. So if they have other ingredients, it's certainly l'chol ha'dayis, there would be mutter. The Klosenberger are very, very machmer in this halacha, very machmer in this halacha, more so than anyone else in the entire firm world. And therefore they buy almost nothing which is made from commercial bakeries for this reason. Unless the bakery used dafka fresh eggs. I was once traveling together with a Hasidic fellow who comes from a Rebbe family. And he told me this makes life very, very difficult when he travels. You know, because most things you just can't get. You know, which were not made with processed, which eggs, which were canned in process. Because the whole commercial world, nobody wants to be bothered with peeling eggs. It was the time. Labor is the most expensive thing nowadays. So this issue of not leaving butter, according to Rav Moshe, in one's own home, one should in fact be machmer and not leave these things overnight. So again, if you're going to peel onions, garlic, or eggs for tomorrow's use, so you should get another ingredient to them before you leave them overnight. So this is the short course. This is the short course of the halachas that are involved in eggs. But as I say, the short course. The halachas are very, very interesting and very complex. Good night, Rabbi Yisrael. If there's another ingredient in it, it certainly would be mutter, yes.